Welcome to this week's podcast from Church on the Rock. We hope that it will challenge and inspire you to be a more passionate follower of Jesus. For more information about Church on the Rock, visit us at cotrcalera.com.
This moment in Scripture where Jesus tells us, okay, Jesus commands us to love God. How does God command us to love Him? And I think that when you look at this, one of the things that it seems like a really odd thing for God to do this, especially when you think about the word love and the way that we interpret it in our society. And I think so often we subconsciously connect love to, you know, the emotions we experience in life. The love that we have for our children, or the love that we have for our spouse, or the love that we have for family, these kinds of things, because a lot of these loves that we have are can be intrinsically connected to, you know, emotions and feelings. And a lot of times those feelings are there, especially at the beginning of the nature of that relationship. And here we have Jesus commanding us that we are to love Him. All right. And so what happens is when we reckon, when we take the way we see the word love in our society and we connect it to what God was telling us to love Him, it leads us down this path of relationship with God where we're always trying to be emotionally connected with God. Like, if I'm going to love God, then I need to be emotionally connected with Him. And so we have these emotions that we have in our relationship with God, whether it's, you know, we cry when we pray, or we get goosebumps in worship, or we get emotional at the end of a sermon, or, you know, something happens and God moves in our life and we feel really connected to Him. And then, you know, so we're always looking for that next thing sometimes. And like, well, you know, last time when I worshiped God and I raised my hands, maybe this time if I worship God and raise my hands, I'll have the same feeling I had last time. And sometimes in the charismatic Pentecostal movement, it can be one of the problems is that we become too emotional driven in everything that we do. But how can God command us to love Him at an emotional level? Like, that's not something that just kind of comes out of will. But at the same time, we see that the greatest commandment that Jesus gives us that we're to love Him. Right? And so what we have to understand here is that this word love that Jesus talks about, love the Lord your God, is not some kind of maybe agape love or filial love. It actually comes from the Greek word ahava. And the word ahava literally means to act lovingly towards or to be loyal to. To act lovingly toward or to be loyal to. Love the Lord your God. Be loyal to the Lord your God. Be loyal to Him. Act in a way that is lovingly to God. It has really nothing whatsoever to do with any kind of emotional feeling or anything like that. What we see here is not that Jesus was commanding to love God by having certain emotional responses to Him, but rather it was to have an utter commitment and loyalty to God. Love meant, there's a guy by the name of Pastor Chuck Warnock, he said, love meant action. Love meant living a certain way that distinguished God's people from all other people. Loving God meant worshiping Him, the one true God. And he goes on to further explain by breaking it down into four different ways. Love the Lord your God. Be loyal to the Lord your God. Act lovingly toward the Lord your God with all of your heart. The word heart comes from the Greek word lev. And it isn't a word that when you think about heart, we think about maybe emotions. Like I think the Message translation says, love the Lord your God with all your passion. All right, because when you think about heart can have to do with your passions. But when you look at the Greek word lev doesn't really mean emotions. What it means more is it means your mind and your thoughts. Okay, It's talking about your mind and your thoughts. Love the Lord your God. Be loyal to God within your mind and your thoughts. Deuteronomy 6:6 says, these commands that I give to you today are to be on your hearts. How do you put a commandment in your heart? How do you put a commandment in your heart? This is the same word that we see that's being used here, okay? It's the same phrase, okay? These commandments I give to you today. These commandments here are to be on your minds. These commandments are to be in your thoughts. This is exactly what it's talking about. So when Jesus tells us to love God, he's not talking about an emotional experience. He's talking about being loyal to God by the way that you think. But then in your mind, that you are loyal, that you are committed, that you act lovingly to God by the way that you think and the way that you use your mind. Love the Lord your God with all of your heart, your love, your mind, your thoughts. Love the Lord your God with all of your soul. That word soul is the Greek word nephesh, and it could be more accurately translated like this: love the Lord your God with all of your life. All of your life, probably be more accurate way to translate it. The scholars believe, Hebrew scholars and Greek scholars, rabbis believe this is what Jesus was saying: love the Lord your God with all of your life. In other words, are you willing to sacrifice your life for him? Are you willing to sacrifice your life for him? You know, the Apostle Paul is the one that says, I am crucified with Christ and no longer live, but Christ lives in me. The life I live by faith. All right? I am crucified with Christ and no longer live. Look, you know what? It's easy to give your life for Jesus if you crucify your flesh every day. If every day you recognize that you are crucified with Christ and no longer live, but Christ lives in you, that your life is his. Love the Lord your God with all of your life. Are you willing to give your life? Now look, the truth be known is that we sit in here in some nice cushy seats in an air-conditioned room, and we have no threat of anybody really coming in to bother us, throw us in jail, or kill us because of our faith. Now there are thousands of people that live in a different world than we live in. Same world, different circumstances, and they have the threat of losing their life for their faith. But if it ever came to that, are you willing to give your life for Jesus? There's a guy by the name of Rabbi Akiva who lived in the first century AD, and he was tortured to death by the Romans for teaching the Torah. And he said before his death, this is what he said right before he died. He said, all of my life I have wondered about the phrase that says, love the Lord your God with all your soul, wondering if I will ever have the privilege of doing this. Now that the chance has come upon me, shall I not grasp it with joy? And he repeated the words of the scripture, hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone, until his soul left his body. Hear, O Israel, the Lord is our God, the Lord alone. And he said it over and over and over again until he died. Love the Lord your God with all of your life. Give him your life. Love the Lord your God with all of your mind. That word mind comes from the Greek word hesed. And in Hebrew, this was a word that was a word for a lifelong love that was richer and deeper than any English word could conceive of. Hesed was a steadfast, rock-solid faithfulness that endured to eternity. It is a love that can be counted on decade after decade, and it's not about the thrill of romance, but it was the security of faithfulness. Love the Lord your God with all of your hesed had to do with a lifelong commitment that my life is unmovable. I am unmovable. I am steadfast in my commitment, in my loyalty, in my faith to God. Love the Lord your God with all of your hesed. All of it. Be steadfast. Be decade after decade. I will not move regardless of my emotions, regardless of my feelings. I'm going to be an immovable force in my faith and in my commitment to God. And love the Lord your God with all of your strength. And that word strength comes from the Greek word me'od. And it literally means, the word me'od means, it could be translated very specifically, the word very. In other words, it's saying love the Lord your God with all of your very. Makes a lot of sense, doesn't it? Not really. But the rabbis and Greek scholars, when they talk about this, one of the things that they say is that they say it could be read like this. Love the Lord your God with all of your oomph. Okay? With all of your oomph. The word kind of pushes you to love God heartily, earnestly, zealously. It would be like, you know, guys, when you had to change the tire and you get that thing and right? There's that extra oomph in to get that nut off that tire, to pull the tire. There's lots of other examples, but this is the picture of what we see here. Jesus, and strength is not a bad word when you think about the way it's interpreted, because really is what it's talking about, but it's talking about that extra set of, you know, oomph, that, you know, earnest and zealous, just go get them. Okay, this is what Jesus has taught. Love the Lord your God with all of your love the Lord your God with all of your oomph. Just give it that little extra for God. Give it that little extra for God. Just, you know, push a little harder. Give him a little bit more. Okay, love the Lord your God with all of your strength. This is what it means to love God. And Rob, if you'll come. And the last part, Jesus here says to love the Lord, or to love your neighbor as yourself. This is where, so love God. Love God. Be loyal to God. Be loyal to God with your heart, with your thoughts. Be loyal to God with your life. Be loyal to God with your steadfastness. Be loyal to God with your strength, with your oomph. And then he says, we're to love your neighbor as yourself. Most oftentimes when we read through this, we look at this from the perspective that I'm to love my neighbor the same way, that with the same love that I have for myself, which to be quite honest is a noble way to live, and truthfully, quite honest, very hard. Especially when you consider that Jesus actually quantified to us who our neighbor is. You remember? Because they were wanting to know. Like, Jesus says, love your neighbor as yourself. And they're like, oh, who's my neighbor? Because I want to know where the line is. I want to know where the line is of the people that I'm supposed to love. And so what did he do? What did he do when they wanted to know who his neighbor was? He told a story like he always does. Remember the story of the Good Samaritan? There was a guy who was traveling down a road, and he was beat up, robbed, left for dead on the side of the road. And there was a priest who saw him and walked by him. And then there came a Levite, and he saw him. He said, no, I got to go to worship. And then he said there was a Samaritan that came and saw him, and he had pity on him. And he reached down, and he picked him up. He bandaged his wounds, and he helped him. He put him on his own donkey and carried him down the road and helped bandage his wounds and helped him heal, paid for a night in a hotel. Actually paid for more than that. He told the hotel guy, said, hey, do whatever you need to do to get this guy back on his feet. When I come back, I'm going to pay you everything. And he asked the question. He said, who was the good neighbor, right? It was the Good Samaritan. Why is that significant? We see the Samaritan as being, you know, just another person, but Samaritans were enemies of the Jews. Samaritans were enemies of the Jews. They were enemies. They were not loved by them. They were considered to be worthless, trash, secondhand citizens. This is the way that the Jews, and there's a long history of conflict between the Samaritans and the Jews, and lots of problems there. But when Jesus went to quantify who our neighbor was, he pointed out the fact that the neighbor was your enemy. So however far down the rung you think you need to stop going, Jesus went to the bottom and said, this is your neighbor. Um, When we read that passage that says love your neighbor as yourself, that word yourself comes from the Greek word kamoka. And it literally means like yourself. The translation we read said love your neighbor as yourself. But it would probably be more accurately translated if you read it like this. Love your neighbor who is similar to yourself. Who's your neighbor? Now, I know that we could look around at people in here and you'd be like, well, hey, I can love these people because these people are similar to me. But when we compare our neighbor to our enemies, to the people that we despise and the people that we hate the most, we don't really see those people as being like myself. But the truth be known is that's exactly what Jesus was trying to tell you, is that he was trying to tell you that you're to love your neighbor who is exactly like you. And I'm not trying to offend you. I'm not trying to call you a bad person, because immediately you probably think of bad people who've done bad things to you and treated you horribly. And you think, oh, I'm not like that person. But the truth be known is that oftentimes we are. This doesn't seem like an earth-shattering statement, but why is it important? It's because when you realize that you're guilty of the same sins that they are, you realize you shouldn't bear grudges against them and you should love them instead. All people are flawed and sinful, and we need to love them because we ourselves are flawed and sinful. We are to love those who seem unworthy because we ourselves are unworthy. Right? Who in here is worthy of God's love? Who in here is worthy of heaven? Who in here is worthy of God's forgiveness, God's mercy? None of us. None of us. So for every person in your life that you think is unworthy of your love and your kindness, just remember that you're unworthy too. Love your neighbor who is like yourself. If they're unworthy, you're unworthy. All people are flawed and sinful, and so are we, and so am I. I find this happening to me sometimes. I think one of my greatest weaknesses in my life, it's driving. I just can't take it. I'm driving down the road, and this past weekend, I'm thinking like everybody drives like they're not trying to get to where they're going. Like it's like, I'm not kidding. It's like late at night, and it's like people drive like they don't want to go home. Like, what are you taking so long? You're driving 15 miles an hour under the speed limit. At least go the speed limit. Please help a brother out. And here I am, right? I'm getting impatient with people. And then I drive down the road, and I realize I'm getting distracted. And guess what? I'm driving 10 miles an hour under the speed limit, and people are tagging along behind me. And I'm like, oops, better get going, right? I'll be sitting at a red light. Somebody's in front of me. Light turns green. I could tell they're on their phone. I'm like, go! What are you doing? This ain't the time to be on your phone. And then 5 minutes later, I'm at a red light on my phone, and I don't see it turn green. I'm like, argh. So what I see this happening is kind of lived out right in front of me, that all of this impatience and aggravation that I have towards other people, I'm just like them. I do the same thing. Or I've done the same thing, right? Come on, so when you're angered by somebody, when you're aggravated, when you're upset, when you're annoyed, when you're impatient with somebody who lied to you, remember that you've lied too. When you're angered by somebody who spoke bad about you, remember that you've spoken bad about others too. Remember when you are aggravated and impatient and annoyed by people who are immature, remember that you were once immature too. When you're aggravated by people who are ignorant, remember that you were once ignorant too. When you're upset about people who are young and dumb, remember that you were young and dumb too. When you are aggravated and angered by somebody who hurt you, remember that you have probably hurt others too. Remember, okay, If somebody's a rebel and they got problems in their life, remember that you were a rebel too. This is what Jesus was telling us to do. As a church, when we live like that and we understand that, it doesn't matter who walks through our doors, because everybody can be loved. Because it doesn't matter where they are when they walk through the doors, we want God to embrace them and welcome them in, because we were there too. And I can think about my own life and my own place. Listen, I'm a poster child for somebody who didn't do a whole lot of bad things. Okay? I've never drank. I've never smoked cigarettes. I've never done drugs. I've maybe said 3 cuss words in my life, and I did it when I was 12, and only despite my parents who weren't around me. Okay? Even when I slammed my thumb with, you know, I say, dammit, I still don't cuss. Okay? I was a virgin when I got married. I did everything right, and yet still in my life, guess what? At one point in my life, I was lost in my sin, and I was a rebel far from God. And every person out there in the world, look, they may have done worse things for me, but it didn't change the fact that we were both in the same position. And I can love them where they're at. I can love every rebel. I can love every sinner. I can love every person who does every bad thing, because you know what? I've done bad things too. And this is what Jesus was telling us to do. When we love our neighbor, love them, because they're just like you. They're just like you. And that takes a lot of humility to recognize that I'm just like them. I've had my problems. I've had my issues. I've had my bad moments, my bad desires. Things that I've said haven't been great all the time. Things that I've done haven't been great all the time. And you know what? That person that I want to hate right now, that person that I want to hold a grudge against right now, that person that I don't want to love right now, that person is just like me. Just like me. I think, you know, psychologists a lot of times will say that the people in your life that aggravate you the most are the people that are the most like you. So I think it's a weird, this is so true though. It's so true. So true. Come on, will you stand to your feet this morning? Why is this important? Because Jesus said it was important. Because Jesus said that there aren't any greater commandments than these. Love the Lord your God. Be loyal to God with all of your thoughts, with your life. Okay? Be loyal to God with all of your oomph. Be loyal to God with the way you think and the way you live. And love your neighbor who is just like you. When you get aggravated, calm down, breathe a little bit, and understand you're the same way, and you can love them too. And we want to be obedient to God. We want to be obedient. It's the way we show Him that we love Him. It's the way that we prove God that we love Him, is by walking in obedience to Him. All right? And it can be emotional, but it doesn't have to be emotional. It doesn't need to be emotional. It could be just something that we just give to God. Come on, we're going to worship God here together this morning before, as we close out. And I would just encourage you to make a little moment, take a little time with God. Say, God, like, look, if it's an area of your life that we're just not loving God the way, maybe to the standard that God asks us to or commands us to, then let's make it right. If it's maybe an issue with some people in your life, let's make it right. Look, let's make it right with God. Let's make it right with the people. Let's do it the right way. Let's love God. Let's love people. Come on, let's worship Him this morning.